Welcome to The Jump, where we discuss the eating and workout habits of internet celebrities. Apparently, I'm Rachel Nichols, joined here in studio with 2016 NBA champ Richard Jefferson, who would like you to know that he has already worked out twice today, two times.
You got some lettuce in your mouth.
Do I?
And
do I?
NBA front office insider Amin El-Hassan, who would like you to know that he ate a chocolate croissant today. So that was your bit at fitness. Oh. Coming up, we will talk basketball on the show. John Wall and Gilbert Arenas played with Kevin Durant and came away impressed. But are we confident that KD can be KD of old again? We will discuss. First, though, the NBA and the Players Association came to an agreement just after midnight last night on the financial parameters of next season. The Board of Governors expected to ratify the agreement today. So here's the details. Free agency is going to start on November 20th at 6 o'clock Eastern. The December 22nd start with a 72-game season now locked in. The salary cap, that's going to be just over $109 million. And it's going to increase between 3 and 10% each season going forward. That gives teams the ability to plan. Plus, the salary escrow will not exceed 20% and is going to get spread out for potentially two more seasons after this year to accommodate the loss of revenue. Remember, the owners were initially looking for 40% all in one year, and guys were like, I don't want you to take half my salary next season. So they're going to get the same amount of money, just spread it out over the next 3 years. There's also a luxury tax adjustment. We'll get to that later in the show. Richard, it's a lot of different pieces here, and some of it seems kind of a little clerical, but this is what makes the NBA work, are all these numbers and dates and things.
Yeah, and I think the key thing here is that the Players Association and the league agreed to this. Mm-hmm. So when everyone's agreeing to it, we understand that there's a give and take, and especially in this situation when there's been such a crazy year, there is no, we're going to dig our heels into the ground on this moment. It's like, no, look, we all have to come together for a compromise, and Michelle Roberts is one of the best in the business, so she made sure. Adam Silver is one of the best in the business, if not the best commissioner in all of sports. So if they agreed on these parameters, that means that these are fair and balanced.
And there's more coming up, right, to agree on. So it's a good sign, to your point. There's so much more to figure out.
Yeah, and this was a tough situation because most of the time when we're talking about labor versus management, management's trying to get one over, right? Like, that's usually the CBA negotiations, I would say, are a little kind of, you know, a little underhanded. But this time it's legitimate. Like, there really are massive losses in revenue that are going to affect how we can keep this whole business going. Mm-hmm. And without fans coming in, that thing is ongoing. And so for them to come to an agreement where I thought the players really made out pretty well for themselves. Rachel, off air, you said they got the smoothing that they refused, you know, 4 years ago when the Cavs spiked. But, I mean, I think that is very important for players. And, again, the Steph Currys in the world, the Russell Westbrooks, those guys are fine. Yeah. We're talking about the Tremont Waters and the Taco Falls and the Javon Carters and guys like that, guys who are literally making their first little bit of money in their life. For them to have 40% withheld, that would have been onerous.
Before your agent takes his cut.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, the part of this agreement that I'm still waiting to see is what they're going to do for health protocols. Mm. And we saw this with the bubble, right? They came up with the playoff format in which teams would be invited before they released the health protocols, in part because they are so complicated and take so long to work out every detail. Just because they came last didn't mean that they used the least care. Richard, you and I were in the bubble.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them, and guess what? They worked. That being said, this is not a bubble. And so I will just keep saying that there are going to be positive tests. Mm-hmm. This is going to be harder than the NFL or Major League Baseball because you are playing indoors. You are trying to play multiple games a week as opposed to having a six-day break like NFL teams do to figure out if they have a positive test, if it's spread. This is 3 or 4 games a week, and it is indoors, and guys on top of each other. It's going to be...
It's not going to. I think that was key to getting started early and playing, saying you're going to play 72 games. Realistically, you know that there is not going to be one single team that probably completes all 72 games, whether it's a pause, you know, some sort of like rescheduling. But I think the key is like, hey, if we start early, we try and play 72 games, that'll get us to that magical number of like 60 plus that they probably need to make sure
that you need 70 for a lot of the local TV contracts.
Exactly. Yeah. So that gives them some leeway. If you start and you start at 70, then it's going to be difficult.
The other thing is they're going to try and make the schedule where in baseball style, you go to a city and you play several games.
We're going to talk about that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We'll see.
I've been busy working out.
Lots of jump. You learn things. He learned right on air.
I learned that.
Let's talk about free agency. You could learn something here, too, because the updated calendar does, in fact, have free agency. 6 o'clock Eastern, November 20th. A little jump free agency show coming. I can smell it. 2 days after the draft, with signings able to become official on November 22nd. Now, that means there's only a 10 days, right? From the start of free agency until training camps open on December 1st. This year's class of free agents, which doesn't have nearly the franchise players, is the way I'm going to put it, as years past, it will be an incredibly short window for them to make a decision if they switch teams, move to a new city in time for camp. Ooh. Here's Kevin Pelton's current list of top 10 free agents. Now, this is led by Anthony Davis, who, by all accounts, will decline his player option and return to L.A. The only other 2020 All-Star to even enter free agency is Brandon Ingram. He is restricted, so the Pelicans are going to be able to match anything they come up with.
That's a light list.
Right. And look, last year.
When Christian Wood is top three on the list.
That's a diet soda list right there.
Well, they're a little bit lucky because remember last year with Kawhi, he took some time to make his decision. And then Danny Green waited for Kawhi to make his decision. You wouldn't be able to do all that this year. Training camp starts 10 days after free agency starts.
I'm going to be really honest. There's nobody on that list that you're going to wait for. I'm saying, look, Anthony Davis, we kind of know it, kind of have a very good feeling. And then when you start to go, I think, you know, Fred VanVleet is so key to Toronto. But I think there's unknowns about what he can do in other places. You know, so you saw Malcolm Brogdon, who was key in Milwaukee, all of a sudden go to Indiana. And it's just like not the same type of impact. But just going to say it's a light list compared to what we've seen the last few years.
I mean, it's a light list, but you bring up Brogdon as an example. Milwaukee missed him
a lot,
right? Like, you could say whatever, oh, he wasn't as good as we thought he'd be in Indiana in his first year. He was up and down. But the reality is, he was missed in Milwaukee. And so, regardless of where those guys end up, the teams that have him, like for VanVleet, for instance, if Toronto loses VanVleet, that's a big loss for them.
He could be the key piece that finally completes the puzzle.
Somewhere else.
Well, right? I mean, that's...
But the reality, Rachel, is if you're a front office that's worth your salt, you've got... All your plans have already been done. You've had months to do this. You got your homework. You knew who the free agents were going to be. Sure, there are going to be guys who are going to opt out or maybe not that might change that list a bit. But for the most part, we know who the free agents are. We know what our needs are. We know we've already budgeted out how much we want to have on the books for the next couple of years for us to do other type of domino things. So, the question is, oh, is this surprising? Oh, no, I wasn't ready. You guys just sprung it on me. That's not as big a deal. The bigger deal is once I get a guy signed, usually, Richard, you notice, we have a whole summer to send you the playbook.
You don't read.
You might stop by summer league and say what's up to the young guys.
It's more camaraderie building than actual, like, functional building.
You show up to informals. There's a lot of kind of build-up before we get to camp.
Go ahead.
Now all that is, like, immediately.
But the other part about it is when I talk about that's a light list, there is not one player on there that's going to change your entire offense or your entire defense. When you're signing Klay Thompson, a James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kawhi Leonard, you need time.
Yep.
You know, so you need a ton of time. Anthony Davis, we kind of have a feeling.
He doesn't count.
But he doesn't count. But that's what I'm saying. There's not one person on that list.
We don't expect him to change.
There's not one person on that list that is going to shift your offense completely. So even in that moment, that to your point, you don't need as much time to get ready and to do. These are kind of pieces that you plug in.
Right. And so they're going to sign, and they'll probably just move to the city right away and start working out with their coaches.
I mean, I'm confused. Are you saying that some of these deals might already be prearranged?
Damn right. I'll say it.
I don't think any sort of thing like that happens in the National Basketball Association. Everyone follows the rules.
There's probably only three free agents still left on that list of 10 that we just saw. There's probably three. There's three.
Look at the houses.
They already have houses someplace
else. I am someone who has long said that our tampering rules in this league need to account for reality and the way it functions now. And I think that this year, while certainly nothing official has been said and nothing official has been agreed to, I can't imagine we're going to have as much tampering policing this year. I think it's just get it done.
Yeah.
Get it done.
1201 deals. 1201 deals aren't done in 60 seconds, ladies and gentlemen.
And there we go. All right, I do want to move on to something much more serious and really very sad news out of Boston as Basketball Hall of Famer and Celtics legend Tommy Heinsohn passed away today. Heinsohn played for the Celtics when they won their first title in 1957 and was at the broadcast table when they won their 17th title in 2008. In the 51 years in between, he was just a constant, a six-time All-Star, 8-time NBA champion as a player, then coached the Celtics throughout the 70s, winning two more titles. His career in basketball continued as a broadcaster in 1981 when he and Mike Gorman became the voices of the Celtics for nearly 40 years, and he still called home games as recently as this past season. The Celtics ownership group just released a statement saying, "This is a devastating loss. Tommy was the ultimate Celtic. For the past 18 years, our ownership group has relied hugely on Tommy's advice, his insights, and have reveled in his hundreds of stories about Red Auerbach, Bill Russell, and how the Celtics became a dynasty. He will be remembered forever." Heinsohn was one of the great presences of the NBA. His number 15 hangs in Boston's rafters and will forever. He was 86 years old, and our thoughts are with his family. The Knicks, following a fascinating power forward driven summer of 2019 with a 21-win non-bubble season. Really was something to behold. All right, so they led to, of course, new team president Leon Rose, new head coach Tom Thibodeau. Rumors already swirling around guys like Chris Paul, maybe a Melo reunion. We don't know if the fit is going to work for that. Free agency officially 10 days away. So, Richard, there is a lot going on here, right? There's the draft, the free agency. Training camp starts December 1st. What do you think the Knicks' strategy?
Training camp starts December 1st?
Yes, my friend.
God, we got to get back to work already.
Working right now.
That's a bad sign, America.
But you are currently working.
There's a difference between us doing this and talking about mixing in football highlights. That's great. Great job by our producer. There's a difference between, like, when we really go back to work.
How do you think the Knicks should approach the next 3 weeks of their lives? Because
not
it will be
go back
pitiful.
To work. That's what I think they should
they have, let's have
I'm
hope.
Kidding.
Come
I'm
on.
Kidding.
Hope
okay, all kidding aside. I think the fact that they can take on bad contracts, as long as it's paired with somebody. I've referenced the Nets. The Nets had a historic bad trade where they had no draft picks during down years. And then what did they do? They traded Timothy Mozgov and they got D'Angelo Russell. So they took on a bad contract, basically got the number two pick in the draft.
This is the playbook, right?
He turns into an all-star. The team starts rolling. It becomes attractive to free agents. And that thing took like 2 years to turn it around, 3 years to turn it around. So I think if the Knicks follow that, I love the Chris Paul like idea. I'm not saying that it would, but he's the type of player that can give you some stability that they haven't had. He's a proven winner, and he can actually give the guidance that you've seen over the course of his career. Does he have some things with him? But you're not going to get a perfect situation, and I think Chris Paul would make a lot of sense.
Chris Paul would have to want to play there,
though.
I don't know if he wants to play on a team that's at that level of rebuilding, and frankly, so far from his family here in LA. Yeah.
$80+ million owed over 2 years, 35 years old. This doesn't match up with the timeline of this roster. It doesn't.
You don't like his idea. What would you do?
I think
Mr. formerly worked for the Knicks organization.
Yeah, man, that was a time. I would still have my eye on 2021. I would still make moves within that context. But being a team that's under the cap, having some flexibility, means you can accept some contracts that maybe aren't great, but as long as they're not onerously long.
2 years
and get
isn't
some,
long.
And get some assets in return, and you build that way. The big thing, though, is Tom Thibodeau is a win-now coach.
Yes.
He's not here to help Kevin Knox figure out his life, right? He's here to win now.
He may also be, but he
understood the job that he took, let's first say that. But the one thing that I will say, and I agree with you, but the idea that the Knicks, everyone always has cap space. They always got cap space. Well, look, at some point in time, you got to get a player in there that can make players want to come there and take up that cap space.
Players will want to go to a place that looks like you have your stuff together, right? What the Lakers did to attract LeBron was have their stuff together with Kuzma and Josh Hart and Brandon Ingram. It looked like something that was promising. What the Nets did.
Yeah.
With Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie. And
what the Clippers did.
Like what the Clippers did. They all had their stuff together. So then the free agents said, yeah, you guys know what you're doing. The problem is the Knicks are an abomination. And they said, but I have money. But so does everyone else.
Right. Yeah. So this is what I would say. I think that the Knicks have stretched as far as they can with how bad they can be and seeing, oh, wait, no. We're not going to attract free agents just because we're the New York
Knicks. Right.
So they figured that out. I do think the bar for them, kind of like it was the Lakers, is a little lower than for, say, a franchise like the Nets. For the Nets to convince players to come there, it took really having their act together. Yeah. And they really did it. The way Sean Marks turned that around was exceptional.
Yeah.
I think for the Knicks, the bar is
competency.
Medium, right?
Just be competent.
And I do think that playing in that arena is incredible. I mean, Richard, you and I spent so many days.
Yeah, I love it.
Like, those games are amazing. And that playing in New York.
It's not amazing on the other side. Let me just say
that. But if you can be the guy, and this is what they were trying to sell Kevin Durant, if you can be the guy who finally delivers a title back to New York City, you will
or
be
even
a god
respect,
forever.
Even respect if
and
you
I
can
do
deliver
think
that back to the Garden.
I do think that it's still possible, but.
You need more than just be the guy to save
us. Jesse would like to talk about something else besides the Knicks for the rest of the hour. So he would like me to tell you that coming up after missing the finals the last 2 years, the Bucks are going to try to improve with Giannis's free agency looming. How do they do that? We will discuss. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined here in Studio H in Los Angeles by Amin Alhassan, Richard Jefferson. And as we discussed at the top of the show, the NBA and Players Association have reached a deal to begin free agency on November 20th. The regular season starts December 22nd. Not a lot of time there. Another important part of that agreement are the new luxury tax rules in place for next season. And here are some of the key points. Salary cap set at $109.1 million. Luxury tax will be $132.6 million. That's all more money than I think any of us deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, Richard.
I just look at Richard over there. I wasn't sure. Maybe not so.
It's all gone.
those are both the same as last season. So that means the league is going to reduce the luxury tax bill for teams at the end of next season. And we'll get that done by decreasing the percentage amount that the league's BRI, basketball-related income, declines from projection. So that's a lot of stuff. But here's an example from Woj and Tim Bontemps. If BRI drops 30% from projections next season, then say the Golden State Warriors' projected luxury tax bill would also be reduced by that same amount, 30% from $60 million to $42 million. And here are the teams in the luxury tax currently, the Warriors, the Celtics, the Sixers, the Nets, the Rockets. So, Amin, using your front office experience, who are the biggest winners of the new luxury tax rules, and why is that answer the Warriors?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't alphabetical order on any level. Like, we know who it is. It's the Golden State Warriors. And it, just like they benefited 4 years ago from a cap explosion, spike. It's not due to any planning. It just happened that way. They lucked out here. And this is an onerous tax bill that they're looking at, particularly for a team that didn't have quite the splash in a new building that they thought they were going to have last year. So this is a big money savings for them. But again, beyond the financial savings, we had it up on the top of the graphic. You only have a reduced mid-level and your minimum exceptions to go out there and go hunting. So the biggest thing about the luxury tax in this new CBA that we've had in the last 8 years or whatever is that it's not just, hey, give me more money if you're the league. It takes away mechanisms that you could use to improve your team. Like, for instance, sign and trade.
Right.
As a luxury tax team, you cannot sign and trade. And so this is a way for the Warriors to, yes, save money, but they're still operating with their hands tied behind their back a little bit by the CBA.
How many teams on that list did we see with a top five pick?
Just one.
Just one. Like that right there again. So even though that they might not, you know, there's flexibility and there's all this stuff, when you have the ability to bring in a top five pick, it doesn't matter what your mid-level exception is or your minimum contract is that you can sign. You can
You're getting that on a friendly contract.
So that's what I like about the way the Warriors have positioned themselves. And like you said, they didn't make the splash that they wanted to, but ultimately everyone is coming back. Everyone's healthy, everyone's rested, and they get to add a top five pick in a position that they need help in. Everybody know about Wiseman a little bit. And so that's what makes, I think, the Warriors definitely the winner in this situation.
If he falls to them in two.
I think the Minnesota, if he's the best player, Minnesota, take him. If he's the best player, take him. Don't go for need.
Carl Anthony Towns wants to work with you.
Well, Carl Anthony Towns hasn't sniffed the postseason, but go ahead.
I will say this about the Warriors. So when they were the beneficiary of luck, right, in 2016 with the cap spike, and Kevin Durant happened to have his contract with Oklahoma City up that summer, et cetera, it didn't have anything to do with the circumstance. In this case, I will say that the reduction in luxury tax happening to benefit them is very directly related to the circumstance. They had planned to pay that luxury tax bill with a very beautiful new arena that ownership funded itself, did
out
not
pocket.
Ask the state of California to pay for, from
I'm joking, Rachel.
I'm sorry.
Some of us pay taxes,
and it means something to
us. I'm just joking.
as opposed to Mr. Basketball player over there.
$750 in taxes?
All I'm saying is that when he bought the team...
I would like my tax money to go to schools and hospitals.
When he bought the team, it was worth $400 million, and now the team's worth like $4
billion. The money that they were going to pay that luxury tax bill is not coming in from fans because the state of California is not letting 20,000 people in that building anytime over this next season. So the fact that they are getting some of a break on that due to COVID that they were going to pay but couldn't pay because of COVID, I feel like at least it meshes up more. I agree.
I think the Warriors really just needed to catch a break.
They did.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to move on to the Milwaukee
Bucks. All bad things happened to them.
At the end of yesterday's show, Brian and Windhorst and I had a difference of opinion on how Giannis Antetokounmpo should approach the Supermax this summer. Brian thinks that he should sign it, but have sort of a backroom deal with the Bucks that he is allowed to request a trade later if he is unhappy. Kind of the way he pointed out that, and I didn't know this, this is Brian reporting, that the Thunder and Paul George had. That basically, and apparently, Richard, you knew this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know this yesterday. That's what I learned on the jump yesterday. And he said that Giannis should do that so that he both gets the extra money, which is $82 million, and has that flexibility. I don't think that he should do that. I think that then puts the onus on him to request a trade, which is uncomfortable for him, and then he can make up that money other ways if he wants. And he can just stay and sign the Supermax the next summer. Two names are Zach Lowe has reported, though, that the Bucks have interest in to try to keep Giannis interested, possibly sign this offseason or at least next offseason. Do it for me, please.
Bogdanovich.
But the, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Of the Kings. Well, because Boyan in Utah.
Boyan's in Utah.
And Bogdan is in the Kings.
Yeah.
Victor Oladipo of the Pacers. Do that one. Reports there has been no traction, though, on a Chris Paul deal so far. So, Richard, how can the Bucks improve this offseason?
I really think that the Bucks just need a high-level B, right? Because they need a high-level B player. And I think Victor Oladipo definitely fits that. Because when we look at George Hill, when we look at, you know, just the way their team has been made up, Bledsoe, these guys haven't had the impact that you want for them in the postseason. And look, if you have a great player, your job is to fill the deficiencies around him. And they just haven't done a great job of that the last couple seasons.
Do you think this team isn't talented enough to win a championship?
I don't think that they fill in the gaps well enough.
I think
they are talented enough, 1,000%.
Yeah. 1,000%. So to me, I question why Chris Middleton could look so meek and then Giannis goes out and all of a sudden there's a different Chris Middleton here.
But it was a 1-2 game situation.
Even so, he's played historically well when Giannis sits out. There's something about their offense that needs to change. It is too cookie cutter, too basic, and too easy to game plan against in the postseason. And so, yes, I agree with you. A Victor Oladipo would help, or a strong floor general, a Drew Holiday would help. Those are good moves. But there also needs to be a conversation of, Bud, how are we going to make this offense more varied and more complex and more egalitarian so it's not Giannis has the ball and we all wait? Because that's not good enough.
I have to think that conversation has happened. Otherwise, Bud would not still be coaching this team. I really do. I have to think that. And Bud is smart. And I think he knows what the rest of us know, that there need to be some changes there. Richard and Amin are going to take a segment off. Yes. I don't even know what you people are going to go do because Mike Schmitz is coming into the studio. He is going to be getting us ready for the NBA draft and his draft show, which is going to be on ESPN2 later tonight. Here, though, is what The Jump recommends for today. Oh, yes, this is Nick Nurse.
Oh.
Rapture, 15 teams, 4 countries, NBA championship, and how to find a way to win damn near anywhere.
Including Iowa.
Love this title.
Nerd. Shout out to G League.
Incredible career journey led to winning, of course, the 2019 title as head coach of the Raptors. You can get it wherever books are sold. Oh. Shout out Nick
My
Nurse.
My guy. I love
this
Nick
This is
Nurse.
An excellent read. And now I am thrilled to be joined by ESPN NBA draft analyst Mike Schmitz right here in our LA studio. Mike, you are hosting a draft special called Prospect to Pro that airs tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. I'm going to give you guys a little sneak peek of Mike's conversation with one of the top prospects, Anthony Edwards.
What's going through your mind when a defense is retreating?
My trainer always tell me when a defense bagging up, they at your, like, that's when you got them, like, that's when you got them. So when they bagging up on me, I just watch their feet. Like, most defenders, when they bagging up, they don't want me to get to the rim, so they want me to shoot. So I have to shoot the ball sometimes to let them know that I can shoot,
right,
and I'm not afraid to shoot the ball.
Right.
So sometimes they come up. And once they come up, that's when I get to my in and out. A lot of people go for my in and out a lot because I think I sell it a lot. But majority of the time when I get down here, it's more of my body because I'm always bigger than the defender that's guarding me. So that's most of the time,
Yeah, and you mentioned it here. Like, they're expecting you to get downhill, right? So you have the little guard
like, watch
who's on his heels,
up.
Backs up, boom,
see?
Pop,
in like
and out.
The in and out.
Yes.
I can tell they watch film on that because when I did the in and out, he took his first step back. I'm like, I'm not scared to shoot the ball.
So you're reading that as you're coming down.
Every time someone's guarding, I'm always reading that, yeah.
First of all, you getting to sit down and watch film with these guys is so cool. This is going to be such a good show tonight, and I love that line from him. Sometimes you got to shoot. Sometimes you got to let them know. Why are scouts so excited about Anthony Edwards and his potential?
He's the most effortless scorer in the draft. You know, I was out in Maui when we sat down for that film session, and I saw firsthand 37 points against Michigan State. Mm-hmm. He looked like an NBA All-Star, you know, making threes off the dribble, step backs, and his ability to get to his spots reminds me a little bit of James Harden. Now, not as accomplished of a player as James, but 6'5", 230 pounds, 6'10 wingspan, can get downhill, and then can stop on a dime as well. So he's going to be a bona fide scorer from the day he steps in the NBA. Now, needs to prove himself as a winner, as a defender, as a decision maker, but scoring the ball, he's one of one in this draft.
Yeah, by the way, I like how you slipped that in. You know, when we were in Maui,
good living.
Must be nice. What about the Dwayne Wade comparisons? Because we've seen him and Dwayne go back and forth on Twitter, right? And Dwayne said, hey, I think he might even be better than me.
I think that's a lot to put on him. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't quite the winner, the competitor that Dwayne was. Dwayne, obviously, a Hall of Fame player. So I think that's a lot to put on a kid like Anthony Edwards. But I hope for him he can reach that level because the talent is certainly there.
Yeah, I mean, there's some current players who get a little bit annoyed if a guy who, frankly, hasn't done anything yet in the league, because, of course, he couldn't. He hasn't been drafted yet. So those comparisons start to bubble up. I like Dwayne going all the way the other way. Like, absolutely, he's going to be so good, better than me. Okay, kid, let's see you go. So there's a little bit of that, too. I want to run through some NBA draft superlatives. So first up, Mike, who is the best overall prospect in your mind?
LaMelo Ball. He's in a class of his own in this draft. He's a 6'7" point guard who can make every pass and pick and roll. He's incredibly instinctual, creative, and he's really showtime. I mean, reminds me a little bit of Trae Young just in terms of the wow factor that you get with him. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not that level of shooter. You know, he's bigger, obviously, at 6'7", but similarly ball dominant, a guy you kind of got to hand the keys to and say, hey, you're our engine now. But he is really, really impressive to watch in the open court. He makes everyone around him better. Small sample size we're working off of with those 12 games in Australia, but in terms of the upside, the creativity, the star power, he has all of that.
I'm so interested in this because Brian Windhorst was on our show yesterday and he said, look, I know Jonathan Givony, you, Kevin Pelton, our colleagues here at ESPN, are all putting LaMelo not just at the top, but you guys are all saying you think he is one of one, sort of that tier one class by himself. And yet Brian said that he's talking to scouts and executives around the league, and he is not hearing front offices feel that way about LaMelo. Why do you think there's a disconnect there?
Just his lack of a resume. You know, he's bounced everywhere, right? Chino Hills, he was there. He was at Spire Academy. He went out to Lithuania. I saw him play out there in the cold, not as warm as Maui, and then went to see him in Australia. So he's had all these different stops. And I think teams are trying to make sense of, if we bring him into our organization and we're a losing team and we want him to right the ship, is he going to do that? Right. Is he going to go through the dog days that oftentimes you endure when you're one of these franchises, frankly, drafting in the top five? So teams want to see him really fight through those things. They want to get to know him as a person before they feel comfortable kind of handing him the keys.
I just think it's fascinating, too, in the larger context, right? And by the way, I just want to make clear, I am not comparing LaMelo Ball to Luka Doncic. Not going to say they're the same player or the same future. But we did see with Luka, executives on certain teams, when there was an unconventional path to the NBA, when it wasn't the American sort of college system, even though there's plenty of guys who've come over from EuroLeague in the past, but it wasn't what they could touch and feel in the same way as these American kids, there were front offices that said, eh, we don't know, and they passed on him and, of course, regret that now. I will be interested. LaMelo Ball was such an unconventional path, and so many more kids coming up with an unconventional path. If some of the evaluation process is going to change over time, we will see. That doesn't help LaMelo this year. We'll see what happens with him. I want to know who you think is the most physically gifted prospect in this draft?
James Wiseman. I've said it all year. If you were building an NBA center in a lab, he is exactly what it would look like. He's close to 7 foot one, 7'5" wingspan, 9 foot six standing reach. That's up there with DeAndre Jordan, close to Rudy Gobert. And he moves like a wing. I mean, he's incredibly agile. He's light on his feet. He's an excellent rim runner, has potential defensively. He can cover a ton of ground on that end of the floor. So he's really like a ball of clay. Only played the three collegiate games. NBA team's still trying to get a feel for what he's going to look like at the next level, when he's going to be able to help you. But in terms of the sheer physical ability, I mean, he's really, really impressive.
So you're tall already. For me, that kind of wings, that kind of height reach, it's just, it's like fantasy land. We have heard Wiseman's name a lot with the Golden State Warriors. If he's still available at number two, do you think that's a good fit?
I think that'd be great for him personally, because that allows him to focus on the things that he needs to be great at in the NBA to have a long career. Mm-hmm. Running the floor, catching lobs, protecting the rim at a high level. And then there wouldn't be so much pressure to go create offense and be this top three pick. Those are things that he's still trying to improve. So I think that would be perfect for James Wiseman. Now, in terms of their perspective, they're used to playing small. Yeah. They had so much success with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. So if you go get a center, how does he fit into that? I know that they want to get more athletic. We've heard Steve Kerr say it publicly. He absolutely gives them that. I do think the idea of drafting Wiseman and viewing him as maybe the most valuable trade asset would make some sense for them, too. We're going to draft him. We're going to canvas the league and see what we can do with that.
Right. And look, too, you have to look at who the competition is in a particular year. They went small because that was the competition who they were facing when they were winning those titles. The defending champions are the LA Lakers, and they are big. Right? Mm-hmm. They're big inside, and so you might think we do need now some height to compete with them. Who do you think is the most versatile prospect?
It's Denny Avdija. He's also the best international prospect in this draft. He's just a shade under 6 foot 10, 225 pounds, and he can really play anywhere from point guard to power forward. Has the size of kind of a traditional power forward, but you'll see him take it in transition. The bounce passes through tight windows. He can play a little bit in pick and roll. So he's kind of that Swiss Army knife type of guy who really fits the modern NBA, right? The 6'8", 6'9 forwards are really a queen on a chessboard now.
Yeah.
That's exactly what teams are looking for. And so when we talk about the versatility of the Golden State Warriors, Avdija is really the guy who exemplifies that. And I'm a big fan of his game. He's very NBA ready. He's coming from Maccabi Tel Aviv, EuroLeague, not to the same level as Luka Doncic, but he averaged 15 minutes a game. He was a valuable contributor there. And I think he's going to be a day one starter in the NBA.
Queen on the chessboard. That is a great analogy. I love that. Who's your biggest sleeper in this lottery?
Tyrese Haliburton.
Can we have a sleeper? You guys have been talking about this a lot for a year and a half, I think.
Outside of the top five, the top three, it's Tyrese Haliburton out of Iowa State. I love this kid's game. If he didn't get injured, played only 22 games this past season, injured his wrist, fractured his left wrist, he would be in the conversations with Obi Toppin as the best player in college basketball.
Right.
Reminds me a little bit of what we hoped Lonzo Ball would be coming out of UCLA. Highly unconventional game, doesn't handle it too much. He's a ball mover, great passer, funky jump shot. It's almost like he's teeing up a drive and ripping it down the fairway. Like, very, very strange mechanically, but one of the best shooters in the draft. High, high IQ, and his teammates really gravitate toward him. So another guy I think would fit really well with the Warriors if they ended up moving back in the
draft. By the way, I see lottery obviously mean in that lottery pick range. We had Tyrese on the show, and he said, my jump shot, I like my jump shot. It goes in. He said, the ball goes in, and that is, in fact, what matters. Mike, thank you so much. We are really looking forward to your special tonight, Prospect to Pro, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN2. It's crunch time on the jump, and that means we have to start with a very special happy birthday wish to our friend Kendrick Perkins, who turns all of 36 years old.
He is 36! Damn!
Richard, do you have a favorite Perk moment or saying of his?
No, I'm going to say this, man. Perk has defied all odds.
What do you mean?
I'd say he came out of high school, high-level player, won a championship. Now he just talks trash to all of us and makes us all laugh. It's amazing.
Rachel, if you put his brain inside a bird, you know what that bird would do? It would fly backwards. That's my all-time favorite Perkins. But I still don't know what it means.
No way.
But I love it.
Yeah.
Oh. Happy birthday, Perk.
Perk, we love you.
Love
happy
you,
birthday.
Perk.
Come see us soon, please. Happy birthday. All right, let's move on to Kevin Durant. As we know, coming back from a serious injury, set to make his return this season for the Nets. Tore his Achilles in the 2019 finals, but Gilbert Arenas and John Wall discussed playing with Durant this offseason, just doing some runs, and whether they think he's already back in his old form. Take a listen to what he said.
The mindset is the most important. How is he going to start the game off?
Let
me know where he's at this point.
He's
he comes
back.
Out, he shoots the first six shots. goes 5 for 5. Okay.
KD's back.
Yeah. There we go.
Out of 5 of those shots, what was they? A left hezzy.
Yep.
He just blew him to sleep.
Just left hezzy, pull up. Just boom, 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 boom. And then once he was on that, then he goes back to his regular stuff. Phew.
So, RJ, you faced Kevin Durant at his peak, those 2017 finals. I mean, he was incredible. Do you think he can return to that Kevin Durant?
I'll say this. I believe he can return to being a top three player in the league, because ultimately there was a time where he was considered maybe the best player, if not the second best player in the world. And it's even LeBron James is not the same player he was 10 years ago. He's dropped down, but he's still a top five, top two player in the world. And I think Kevin Durant, coming off his injury, as long as he can maintain his health, his skill set is something that we have never seen before. So even if he's only 90% of the old KD, he's still a top three player in the league.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between, is he still going to be great or is he going to be the same? I don't think he's going to be the same. That injury doesn't let people come back the same. There have been people who've come back and been okay. Rudy Gay is the guy who's come back and been okay, but we all know he's not the same.
But he wasn't Kevin Durant to start with.
That's true, but I'm just saying, do you return back to the level that you once were? That's what I'm saying, regardless of what level that was.
This is going to be a real question, right? Because if Kevin Durant's body type is so different than most of the Achilles injuries, sort of the players that we've looked at in the past as a guide. So I just don't know what I'm going to get with him. My assumption is that much like players when they age, Richard Jefferson, find other little ways. The greats fill in the gaps other
smarter.
Ways. Is that
Yeah, be smarter. That's the thing. Even Bron said, like, the guy today would be better than the Bron 10 years prior, and it's because he's so much smarter. And I think Kevin Durant's got to use that basketball IQ a little bit more.
Thank you to Richard Jefferson. Thank you to Amin. Thank you to Mike Schmitz. We're back on ESPN tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.